Hello, this is Melissa. Today is the 16th of June, 2024. I hope that everybody's doing well and hanging in there. I am, but really busy right now with a few things and having a hard time keeping up. So I'm just going to very quickly introduce what I'm putting up today. In January of 2019, Alan Watt gave a talk entitled Scientific Socialism. Obey, take your drugs. Sex will calm all anxiety. Behaviorism and neuroscience run planned society. Alan did this talk on January 13, 2019, and he ended up wanting to carry the theme on the following week. So on the 20th of January, he did a part two. And because I'm pressed for time right now, I'm giving you the second half of the second part of this talk. So it's the whole, both hours are a really good overview of how scientific socialism works. I happen to think that the second half is just a really nice, tight, this is how it's done kind of talk. That's about all I have to say, except that the little half-hour section that I'm bringing you also ties in really well with the real history that will be going up next week on the 20th of June. In October of 2023, I did a Real History, episode 38, October 5, with Mike in Canada, and the title of that was Over the Mountain. And this was a different format for Real History than I usually do, and he had plotted it out. It was essentially, I wouldn't say scripted, but it had a format. And so the one that is going up on Thursday will be the same thing. And it's really a part two of this, Over the Mountain. So the first one in October was a conversation in three parts, directed energy weapons, 9/11 planes, and COVID-19. I've seen a little bit of what Mike has done for this episode on Thursday, and it's very interesting. And what he said to me in an email is when we go to record it, he said, we're going to be talking about what is real and what is fake. And I think that theme ties in really well with what Alan's talking about in this two-part, 2 hours from January of 2019, because so much of how scientific socialism works is to bring us a constant barrage of fake or unreality. I also think that the half hour that I chose to play today, it ties in well with the Tragedy and Hope book club. So hopefully some of you were able to participate in the talk that Darren led yesterday on the 15th, and there'll be an upcoming one on the 29th led by Nick Hayes. Sorry to be so rushed. I hope that you enjoy this short little redux, and have a great week, and tune in for The Real History with Mike. I think it's going to be a very interesting talk. Take care.
Everything is secret, isn't it? We are dealing with agencies and government bureaus and so on. It's always secret. They can't tell you anything. And they won't tell you anything. But people are told that they're there to represent them. For who? Who's representing you for what? They're there to represent you for what? So we go along with this game of pretense, and we have to participate in the pretense. And you're supposed to vote so that someone can rule you. And again, a marketing company will create the image of this person or this party you're going to vote for. And we've been doing that for long before I was born. That same nonsense. It's really amazing to me that people just don't ask the right questions. How many folk do you know who've even asked why your countries are always at war somewhere across the planet? Why? And don't take the glib answer, oh, well, it's to stop some genocide over here or there or whatever. Really? Is that what it's... If we're just out there to do good for people and stop them killing each other? Is that what it's really about? You'll find our countries are behind most of the killing across the world and the plundering still today of the resources of different countries. Way more than any little petty tyrant is doing. The first thing you need for war, and that includes localized war, without even the term war being used, because we don't use that very often, is we're policing actions. Just change the appearance of something, perception management again, to disarm your logical process of thinking. And you find, as I say, that, I mean, Tony Blair is a good example, only one of many. The Daily Mail had it years after that invasion of Iraq and elsewhere, where Tony met with the heads, the CEOs of big oil corporations and the US ones too, and they divvied up the oil fields across Iraq before they did the invasion. But what was the guff that they gave to the public for the necessity for invading Iraq? Well, suddenly Saddam Hussein, the guy who served the West all that time, was a bad man. He was the world's demon, for goodness sake. And that's how you do it. George Orwell's 1984. Who are we at war today with? Who's the enemy today? As they change their gun sights all the time, back and forth, until you're lost. But behind it all is always profit for big corporations. Always. Always, always, always. The whole idea with Russia for years now is because there's a group in the Middle East involved with a group in the US and in Britain who want to have the rights of the oil fields all through the Middle East and into the east of Europe. And naturally, Russia was also laying oil pipelines across. In fact, they were feeding a lot of the gas to the Europe, of course. And that all got cancelled, supposedly, because of the last fracas of propaganda. So it's all to do with corporate warfare, really. That's what it's about. Nothing to do with ideology. Russia's got the same successful psychopaths as we do, running us, behind the scenes. Governments are almost there to rubber stamp things on behalf of the big corporations today. And the big corporations use every technique of control. Again, persuade the public. The first thing you must do for warfare is basically get the public support on your side for anything you want to do. If you want to invade and steal whatever, don't say we're going to steal, we're going to help these folk over yonder. That's what you say. It's not difficult to do. And because you raise a public to be gullible, believing that they've got an honest society, even though there's no signs of it, they keep telling you there is. And so why would they lie to you? Decent folk would say, well, there must be something to it, for goodness sake. And the fallout from it all achieves further goals. And that's what people don't realize too. The mass migration, remember, into the whole of Europe was discussed before Tony Blair got the war going with Britain involved in Iraq. That was part of the agenda, the mass migration into Britain and other countries. So there are many agendas being fulfilled here, and it's not by chance. Not by chance at all. In other words, what I'm saying to you, I've given talks on this many years ago about how history is written. And it's never, nothing sudden in history, unless it's something out of nature that was unforeseen. But anything to do with human involvement means there's been planning involvement. It doesn't simply happen by itself. There's never a spontaneous war on any grand scale. It takes years of planning to get it all going and to get all the logistics worked out, etc., before you make the first move. Big, big battle plans. But for the public, you're taught today that everything's just fairly sudden. Utter non. Your history books are written in advance. And that's why the initial propaganda, no matter how absurd it is at the time, and even more absurd after the facts and after time has passed, with more evidence coming to light, the initial propaganda will be stuck to like concrete. And everybody involved at the top, as they stand together and they close ranks, will never ever vary their opinions. They all know what to say and do to get to keep on their own little power jobs and to stay up in a position of wealth. And that's how precise and total everything is today. History must be taught afterwards the way it was planned to be taught before the event took place. Same with World War I and a whole of other wars as well, for that matter. It's so fascinating to see how the group, the Milner Group that became the Royal Institute for International Affairs, Dash Cancer and Foreign Relations across the planet, for the global enterprise system based in London, England at the time, it's so interesting to read the Anglo-American establishment by Professor Quigley, who was given access to their own historical records. They have their own historical records, for goodness sake. They also have members who write the history for the public, which, and that's different. But for accuracy's sake, for their own members, they have archives of the real histories as it happened, going way back. And Quigley thought it was so important that their function in history and altering and planning history and planning the future was so important that the world should know about it. And in Tragedy and Hope, he went too far. The group that he belonged to kind of panicked, and they took the place back for the book for printing and didn't print more, although luckily enough had been printed that they could be copied. And they are accurate when you compare them. But the other book, The Anglo-American Establishment, giving you the history of this group and how they didn't actually start in the 1800s, but they changed their name in the 1800s. In fact, it was so secretive, they changed their names even amongst the degrees of membership from the low to the top. And he shows you how they worked with circles and how some of the circles would interlap like Chinese puzzle rings. And when they interlapped, those members there, we would call technocrats today, they worked to do more of the doing and persuading other groups and how to go along with the doing of things across this empire that they were creating. And they also planned wars with South Africa to take over South Africa from the Dutch and settlers and the Boers. And they planned an attack on the Boers. And members of this group attacked the Boers, and they took along with them a Times reporter, because they owned newspaper. The members owned the newspapers in the day too, as they still do today. And the reporter's job was to give a fake account of this raid on the Boers and have it as the Boers attacking British settlements. And that would give the propaganda and justification for Britain then, enforcement to an extent, to then send troops in there. And then the troops would police the areas, fight the Boers, and we had the Boer War out of it. And then a handful of people in London, they really ran the empire and the resources of it all, would then grab the diamond and gold fields of South Africa, the diamonds and gold fields. That's how it was done. And Quigley goes through it, and a lot of the members involved in the Anglo-American establishment. It's quite fascinating to read it. When you realize what he's telling you, and in his position too, what he's not telling you, he could even go further than that. But he did say that for the last 100 years or so, they'd pretty well been instrumental in steering the course of history. Well, it hasn't stopped. And depending on how you look upon this agenda, if you're an insider, naturally, you want to get rewarded for going along with all. And you do. Doors will open if you are tapped to go into the CFR. You can't go and apply for it. You're tapped. They've already sussed you out to see if you get your mouth shut, how trustworthy you are, how much influence you have in your little circle. And then they bring you up and put you into different positions. So they're all through the civil service of governments as well. and the military to the top. And for the military, they don't often have to even serve much time in the field, if any at all. They're just rammed up through the ranks very quickly. And once they're up to the top ranks, they know all the contacts of military industrial boys, and then they're given jobs as CEOs sometimes, or go-betweens to lobby on behalf of the military industrial complex. It's quite a system, but it's a completely different reality than what the peasants are taught at the bottom, that pay for everything and fight for everything and do the fighting. It's vastly different. Vastly, vastly different. So perception management is incredibly important in the way that we are run. Now, I've always mentioned in my talks, as I hope I have, that I don't give you nostalgia for the past. But there's no doubt about it. The natural humanity you would see from people, even in times of incredible poverty, and the UK was incredibly poor after World War II, and we were incredibly rationed right up until 1954, I think. And even then, lots of the food was still getting taken out of British farms and sent abroad to feed Europe. That's a devastating war. Devastating. So, but during it all, you still find decency amongst different people, but you'd also find a form of viciousness amongst those who'd had maybe a few generations of poverty. Because to survive, people can become awfully hard as well, naturally. But it was the balancing out of it with decency there too that got people through it. And I remember when people didn't own their own homes. I mean, most folk, say, in Scotland rented council housing. They couldn't afford their own homes. A socialist country, as far as I was concerned, was the suppression of people, not to be able to afford and to buy anything. You're kept at bottom level with wages controls, prices controls, high taxation. And that's how it was set almost in stone that way. It was terrible. And amongst all, you had ridiculous public relations exercises or propaganda run again by psychologists and marketing companies on how wonderful the youth were today. They had all this chance in the pop business and rock business and so on. And we should all be happy because you had good music. Well, it was to give you them a fake idea for the change of the future, because they weren't raking in the millions of bucks like two or three different top groups. Of course they weren't. They were lucky to get jobs a lot in them at that time. As I say, so anyway, Peter Hitchens, he did mention that he's not nostalgic for all of the things that have passed, but he did mention they had basic values. And there was a basic remnant of a culture that came from what is hated. And that was at least Christian values, how you treat each other. That came into good effect to get folk through the hard times. And neighbours would often, I remember it, help each other out to pay the rents very frequently. That was quite normal. You didn't have the mass commercialisation of purchasing, buying, because most folk bought everything second-hand that I knew. And it was the same across a lot of places in England too, a lot of big cities, etc. The people were just broke, and somehow they survived and ticked along, basically. And the so-called empire thing, that was for Hollywood to play that up, the wonderful empire they had, because the general public didn't profit from it at all. They paid for it all through their taxes, because to be armed and policed by soldiers and all the rest of it. But that's what it was. Nothing really changes, just the perception of how it's managed today and the constant reiteration that you're free. And you've never been so free, as you're the most surveyed and surveilled society in history. It's incredible, eh? Anyway, I didn't even mean to go there today. I was just going to prattle this off and a whole bunch of articles. But it gets me that most folk won't ask questions. The youth are always catered to much more than the adults do. Because the youth, and I really mean this, the anthropology and psychology and the milestones in life and psychodynamics, all the rest of the stuff working on us all the time. They know exactly through the culture industry how to cater to you. For the young folk, it's sex and hedonism and narcissism. And just fill their heads full of it. Fill their heads full of it. Get lots of this party, fun, sex. For the people who do get hitched, which are declining all the time, naturally, with all the anti-marriage propaganda coming out there too, except for maybe single parents. The state has become the supplier of goods and finances to single parents and has done for an awful long time. And none of this happened because of pressure from the bottom, folks. It came from the top. Always comes from the top. It suits the banking system, the international banking system, the big system that really runs the world through its networking and its circles and circles, like Quigley said. Awfully important to understand it. Because the same group that the Milner Group belonged to, that became the Royal Institute for International Affairs, Council on Foreign Relations, Pacific Rim Associations, and all the other associates, all the same group, gave you United Nations, the World Bank, the Bank for International Settlements, the International Monetary Fund, and a host of other debt-creating systems, but profits from the banks that you'll pay off. They own them all in the central banking systems across the world. Because money was to be the new military power, the new form of military, to control everybody's lives. And it's been awfully successful, isn't it, when you think about it, to the present time. Because when you're getting some of it, even though it's all debt-based money, people can live a bit better on a materialistic basis than they've ever done before. But again, they've been taught that somehow, like, this candle will never burn down, although it's designed to. Because once the whole world's under the same system, in comes austerity. And just like they're teaching children today, in school now, to worship the planet Earth, and they must sacrifice for the planet Earth, which is another big front organization for total control of the planet and how you live, right down to even if you'll get born, if they'll need you, eugenics, etc. Because that's all part of the same system run by the same group. Always was. And they've got all the time in the world to implement it. They're awfully precise now with their 50-year plans and 100-year plans and what they can achieve, the different goals along that way, all the milestones. They know exactly what they can do now. And you will see all these things come to pass. And the brave new world of Aldous Huxley, it didn't appear out of thin air. Huxley mixed with all the eugenicists. He mixed with the class that were the controllers and the professionals that dealt as controllers on behalf of those who owned the planet and the finances of the day. And he was well aware through many, many discussions and growing up at the dinner table, etc., that through psychology and training in behaviorism and repetition, you could train up and raise a public to believe and behave in any way that you want them to behave and believe. And that's exactly what they've proven over and over again. Most people don't have their own mind. They have no reason to question things if they're just basically materialistically happy and they're getting along in life with, as I say, the substitutes for everything else given to them. But from the beginning, I never came out to talk to the general public. I just knew there's enough people out there asking questions who didn't have the answers. A lot of people, you'll find, were punishing themselves. They couldn't fit in. They knew lots of things were wrong in the world. They didn't know how to get verification of it and the knowledge of it and what was going on. And maybe a lot of them, some of them were brighter than other people, perhaps. And if you don't get the answers and you're demanding questions, you might turn in towards yourself and destroy yourself through either alcohol or drugs or both. And I'm glad that down through the years people have gotten in touch with me to say that I helped them get off of that track. It's very hard to explain to someone where this thirst comes from, this thirst to know. The most important thing in life is why? Why? Has never been asked. Or you're given ersatz answers. You're getting fake answers from the establishment who crush any alternative facts. I'm not talking about reasons, I'm talking about facts. And that's important to know as well. Again, if you're into Lord Bertrand Russell, another Lord, remember, and folk never question why the Lords would be working to create this thing called socialism, because they don't have any affinity for the general public, the common people. Just like George Bernard Shaw didn't. But he had the same attitude as Shaw. And he worked in the same organizations as Shaw. The general public would have to come, everybody individually, to the socialist organizations run on behalf of the elite who should rule you. And you'd have to justify why they should allow you to stay alive and live in a socialistic system. George Bernard Shaw said it. His voice is up on video up there, on an audio. If you want to listen to it. That hasn't changed. And Russell also said that eventually, hopefully he said, anyone will be able to persuade anyone else of anything they want. He's talking about with the right techniques and power behind them. Well, guess what, folks? Look around you today. What's getting pushed? Huh? And everyone fighting everybody else. Because you fall for opinions, you immediately take sides around and say, wait a minute, who's giving us this? Why are they giving us this? What is the final agenda with this? It's too easy by using emotion to get them fighting rather than asking. Isn't it? Remember too, before I finish off this talk, that you can get the books and discs at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And you can also donate to me. You can find out how to do it. If you go into the website, and you'll see all the sites I have listed there at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. You should take note of them in case any of them get pulled eventually. You just never know. Or if I just decide to cut some out because of the cash problems, it definitely takes money. And I was never out for money, otherwise I'd be selling you all kinds of gadgets, gimmicks, and so on. Or magic truths. I could give you lots of the answers to what's called magic, but I wouldn't sell it, basically. And most folk want mysticism as opposed to facts. It's much easier to escape from reality that way for folk rather than to really go after knowledge. Because if you go after knowledge, then you're left with decisions on what you're going to do in life. And will that mouth of yours stay silent down the road or won't it? I've said before, and it's amazing to hear that the talks I've given from even 20 years ago being reiterated by other people in even what's elevated high places, you might say. I've said to remember that you're the only material, just like the builders were always talking about. You are the building material. And you're the only building material that you can be sure of. And start with yourself. Instead of grabbing the latest flag or banner that's waved in your face for some cause or other, start with yourself. And once you've basically built yourself, then you'll see through all the cons that are out there. And then you could be a more complete person. And less angry, perhaps, because you'll certainly, if you follow all the stuff that's dished out on a daily basis to you by the marketers, including those who run all the rebel sites of all kinds, everything out there is either a color revolution or something else on the go, isn't there? And once in a while you have to ask yourself, what are you rebelling against? Who wants you to rebel? And now we have this sanitized version of it, where every country will issue permits for your little demonstrations, and you go and protest, whatever it is, hold hands and sing whatever it is you sing. And then you all go off and have your pizza and coffees like you've done. It's almost like a hobby now in some big cities across the world. It really is, isn't it? It's a nice hygienic safety valve for everybody. Because everyone now has been pushed into different groups that you must belong to. You must belong to something. Or you're not complete, apparently. But again, with a lot of folk now, it's only socializing they get. They can't even talk to each other, even when they're standing next to each other, without texting. Anyway, I'm going to put up some articles tonight. I was going to prat one about them actually, but I just wandered off as I always do. And one of them was about the libraries and how the libraries are churning out. From the 90s in Canada and elsewhere, you would see massive book dumps and garbage dumps of awfully good books. As they were, they call it weeding, by the way. And like all organizations today, they're international. No one in any country, in any particular job, profession, or in, does it according to that country or that culture. They all connect. See what else has been done across the world. Oh, they're doing this. Let's do it too. But your culture, your history is often getting trashed. And along with it, the weeding, as they call it, and it's taught, they call it weeding. Every top librarian knows it too. And some of the salaries of these librarians in the US bowls you over. Really. Honestly. Wherever you get taxpayers' money at work, you're getting plundered, folks. That's where the money is these days, isn't it? But yeah, the books are getting, they're getting chucked in rubbish dumps and the whole bit. And there's a lot of politicization involved naturally of things that they simply want to disappear. Tragic. New Zealand's doing it, Australia does it, Canada's done a lot of it already, still doing it. And the US is just doing it at an awful rate right now. Quietly from the public. They don't want public knowing about it because you might start and get complaints about it. I mean, this is public money. It bought all these books, remember? And a lot of them aren't even selling them off. They want them all ditched. There's a lot of stuff now must disappear from history. The memory hole, as George Orwell called it. So I'll put those links up for those who maybe are curious to find out, to wonder who all the old books in the library, and all the reference books too, simply went to, is to give you new histories all the time. Everything's remade again. So I'm sorry to prattle on tonight, but as I say, I didn't mean to go here in the first place. But once you get started, sometimes it just happens. And I say the main thing is not to repeat just stories, etc. It's to do some thinking at times. Hopefully help other people out who are asking questions too. A lot of young folk are, and not just young folk, but a lot of folk are asking the questions and that they've been running. I used to compare it to being the awakening process. Something sometimes stirs you. Something may have lit the fuse, basically. That starts you off really searching. And it's like coming out of a tunnel onto a field. And the field is laden with minefields everywhere. And everywhere you've got posts with signs that it's come here, here's the answer. Oh no, it's over here, here's the answer. That's how confusing it is, and often deliberately so too, because those who control the world, as you're trying to break free, they'll wrap you off into some sideline immediately if they can. There's nothing in reality that's there by chance. Really. And information, and from the beginning of even writing, or even before writing, but once writing came along, was used from the beginning with conformity of thought, with political and control motives behind things in many, many years. Not all, but getting worse and worse up until the invention of newspapers. And now it's, of course, internet and television and newscasts and newscasters. And the newscasters themselves, again, are corporations, a lot of them, with their big PR companies and their own agents that negotiate for their pays and all the rest. They don't do anything for free. Nothing is spontaneous, folks. Big money isn't behind them all. Big, big money. Millions. And teams of writers at times, too. Teams of them. So question everything and start thinking for yourselves, hopefully. And perhaps, like all down through history, there are always those who are around, a few, who can pass the knowledge on to the next group, who can sometimes have to go and hide themselves in some generations, because knowledge can be dangerous and those who control everything have always known that. So for myself, Alan Watt from Ontario, Canada, it's good night, and may your God or your gods go with you.